Hello, everyone. Joshua Gilliland here, one of the founding attorneys on The Legal Geeks, blogger on Bowtie Law, with a mini podcast about a very unique kaiju movie, Frankenstein Conquers the World. Now, you might wonder, Frankenstein's a kaiju? How'd that happen? Well, it happened in this film, which is one of the most unique kaiju movies I've ever seen. There are lots of funky ones out there. This is high on the list now. So the beginning of this movie is at the end of World War II. So it's right before Germany falls. That would make it early April, late March, 1945. And Germany's getting defeated. We have a stereotypical German mad scientist that has a device with a living heart beating in it. That heart's put into a U-boat, taken to sea, rendezvous with an Imperial Japanese submarine, a handoff is done, and then the Nazis get bombed and defeated. The heart's taken to Hiroshima, and as they're about to begin experiments on it, we have the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima, and which they skip over the attempted coup, Russia declaring war, and the Japanese surrendering, and the happy ending that we have is the end of World War II. There is a lot of exposition in the scene where we find out that the beating heart is the immortal heart of Frankenstein, and that if Frankenstein just kept on living, that he could lose a limb and it would grow back, could be completely destroyed, but the heart wouldn't die and a body would grow back around it. Fast forward a few decades, 15 years, and it is like 1960, 61, and we have an American expat living overseas trying to help treat Japanese people suffering from radiation sickness, radiation poisoning after the atomic bombings, played by the delightful Nick Adams. Love him as Astronaut Glenn. Great actor, and he's there helping. And you know, that's a beautiful thing about Americans and, you know, in the wars we fight, we generally make friends with the country that we fought. And this movie pays a little tribute to that by an American living abroad, trying to help over feeling guilty about those he helped kill with the atomic bombing. Sidestepping all the issues of what happened in World War II, we'll focus on the movie. There's a little boy running around who's homeless, and this turns out to be Frankenstein. Well, Nick Adams is at a friend's house for dinner. She's making him dinner, and there's a hit and run outside. Cab hits the little boy. Cab then drives off. That's a hit and run. In California, there's a duty to stop at the scene of the accident, and we have some pretty harsh punishments for those who fail to do so. The driver of a vehicle in an accident resulting in an injury to a person other than himself or herself, or in the death of a person, shall immediately stop the vehicle at the scene of the accident and shall fulfill the requirements of sections 20003 and 20004. That doesn't happen here. There's nothing. Abby stops, looks at the kid, gets back in the car, seeing there's witnesses, and drives away. None of that's good. In California, the punishments that we have for that could be up to a year in county jail, a $1,000 fine, or up to $10,000, or both fine and imprisonment, because we don't want people committing hit and runs. That's bad for morale when people get hit. Well, eventually, you know, the young Frankenstein boy is found. You know, he's killing animals, he's eating scraps. You know, it's like, it's not a good life for anybody. And, you know, humanity, you know, takes root and people try to help him. Things get a little weird because he's not taken to an orphanage. He's taken to a hospital because it's not clear if he needed treatment just for the leg. But you have a homeless child who's taken in and they're performing experiments on him. He continues to grow, and as he's growing, he doesn't know his own strength. So they decide that the best course of action for him is to put him in a cell since he doesn't know his own strength. All kinds of problems with that. From false imprisonment to saying we're going to have to chain somebody up to keep them safe. Now, there could be issues of restraining someone, and there are specific rules for that. Like if there's a 51-50 hold and somebody's a danger to himself. But saying that this person was so strong, and because of their mental state, they're dangerous, therefore we have to put shackles on him and chain him to the wall. They don't seem to be feeding him enough because he's always hungry. Reporters are allowed in at one point and take pictures of him. And that's ultimately when he breaks out because, hey, flashes are bad. It's almost an homage to King Kong. Well, prior to that happening, a couple of the protagonists go to Germany and they find the old German doctor, and we can now officially call him a mad scientist, who gives them advice on saying, there's one way to find out for sure if you have Frankenstein. Cut off an arm or leg, and if it's Frankenstein, it will grow back. It's fitting a German scientist says this, because that's messed up, and we don't do that. Now, after World War II, because of all the evil, sick things the Nazis did with human experimentation, we actually enacted laws and treaties over human experimentation. One of them is called the Nuremberg Code, and California actually made that international proclamation in addition to the Declaration of Helsinki to prohibit unethical experiments on living human beings, law in California. And that begins with California Health and Safety Code, section 24171. Now, the Nuremberg Code says for human experimentation, the subjects have to be voluntary and well-informed, and consent has to be given. The experiment should be aimed at positive results for society. It should be based on proven previous knowledge. The experiment should be set up in a way that avoids unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injuries. It should not be conducted when there is any reason to believe that it implies a risk of death or a disabling injury. The risk of the experiment should be proportioned to, that is, not exceed, the expected humanitarian benefits. Preparations and facilities must be provided that adequately protect the subjects against the experiment's risks. The staff who conduct or take part in the experiment must be fully trained and scientifically qualified. The human subjects must be free to immediately quit the experiment at any point when they feel physically or mentally unable to go on. The medical staff must stop the experiment at any point when they observe that the continuation would be dangerous. Cutting off a leg or an arm violates all of these. There is no way that's permissible under the Nuremberg Code. And by extension, in California, that wouldn't fly either. Now, to the story's credit, the two doctors, after they come home, after talking with the German scientist, are not happy campers because they have this look of total disgust of, I don't want to do that. Now, one of them does come around and thinks, I'll go for it. And he's setting up in the cell slash dungeon where the boy is being kept. Now the boy is, what, 20 feet tall? That he's going to do it. There's no plausible way to say, hey, I'll cut off an arm and I hope it grows back. Or if it doesn't grow back, thank God he's not Frankenstein. That's a disabling injury right there. There is no way you can say amputating a limb and going, hey, if it grows back, we know who he is. And if it doesn't grow back, we know it's not him. That can't be the way to prove identity. So that was a big no-no. And to the hero's credit, they go, no, we're not going to do that. except for the one who goes rogue, and there are problems with him later on as well. As the boy grows, the hospital where he's being kept says, like, hey, we can't afford this anymore. Let's put him in the zoo. Problems with that. Now, there's one thing to get into the issue of, like, hey, how do we adequately take care of a human being? That's another thing to go, we're going to downgrade him to animal. There's no way to sell that. There's no way where that's just not cruel and inhuman behavior. After the boy escapes the wonderland known as the dungeon, he goes on the run. And because he's smart, he's trying to avoid capture, and conveniently another monster shows up called Baragon, and there's a wonderful fight, and that's all we're going to say about that. But it does raise issues of, when does Frankenstein stop being human? Because people initially go, like, oh, that's a boy. And then he starts to grow and get stronger, and somebody actually says he is no longer a boy. Mentally, he is. And humanity can't just stop. So these films are a wonderful look in the mirror for how do we view life. In the story, people are on board with, hey, we're going to help the kid. And then it's, oh, we're doing experiments on him. And then it's cut off a limb. And then it's, we'll keep him chained up to the wall. I mean, it's pretty medieval. I mean, it does harken back to the 1931 Frankenstein on some levels. That doesn't make it okay, but it just highlights, you know, being human counts, and how we treat each other is why we enact laws to ensure cruelty doesn't take place, that abuses do not take place, and that you don't have mad scientists sawing off limbs to conduct experiments. That all aside, this is a fun movie. It's funky. It's weird. The kaiju spin on Frankenstein's interesting, with the irradiation from the atomic bombing causing him to grow, and that it's, what, 15 years later, and a little boy's running around. So it's, I mean, it's everything weird and wonderful about the early, you know, Ishiro Honda kaiju movies. And this is, the prequel to War of the Gargantuas, but it's not a direct sequel, or excuse me, prequel to it, because they change things around in Gargantuas. It's related, but they clearly decided to take a couple turns that made the first one a standalone film, and it's interesting. It's like the way some Bond movies don't follow each other, type of situation. But frequently seen in Godzilla movies, where you don't know what's canon and what's independent and what's a sequel. That definitely happens in War of the Gargantuas. So that aside, I want to thank Matt Weinhold for lending me his copy of Frankenstein Conquers the World. I had the good fortune of visiting Matt and his wife, Carrie, for New Year's, and their toy collection is pretty amazing, and he has a lot of figures from Frankenstein Conquers the World, War of the Gargantuas, and a whole lot of other cool things. So with that, stay geeky. Stay geeky, America.